Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Juan Gaitán, and I'm the Head of Investor Relations at Cellnex. I'm joined today by José Manuel Aisa, CFO and M&A Director, who will lead today's presentation. I would like to thank you for joining us today for Cellnex Q3 2016 results conference call. We have earlier today posted a presentation, which we will refer to throughout our prepared remarks under the Investor Relations section on our website. Then we'll open the line for a Q&A session. Now I hand over to José Manuel. Please, José Manuel.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for your time today. As a reminder, please note that additional financial information can be obtained on the Investor Relations sections of our website, where a detailed Excel file is available. Now, please allow me to start by highlighting the main milestones of the period. If you go to slide four, you can see that today we are presenting again a solid set of results that show a strong growth in terms of adjusted EBITDA and recurrent levered free cash flow per share when compared to the same period last year. We are also showing solid organic growth in our telecom site rental business that confirms the market expectations for the period. We are delivering on our equity story by executing new accretive acquisitions consistent with our strategy for international expansion. We have successfully issued our second bond, making the most of an attractive market environment with the objective to extend maturities at very competitive terms. We are taking the first step to become the European leader in the distributed antenna system sector, whilst positioning Cellnex to capture potential opportunities associated with the future rollout of 5G. Finally, enough execution firepower is still available to continue growing while maintaining our current credit rating for being eligible in the ECB program. Moving now to slide five. In terms of activity, we have managed to increase the number of PoPs by 3% when compared to December 2015. Even the number of DAS nodes in Italy in just a very short period of time, 3 months. We are proactively analyzing new opportunities that might arise from the consolidation of the fourth mobile operator role across Europe. We continue to pursue tower rationalization opportunities with other clients, and our first project is now ongoing. We are also accelerating our build-to-suit program while additionally assessing the attractiveness to invest in fiber backhauling to the tower for our customers. In the broadcasting business, the retendering process of six new TV channels was successfully completed, with all private channels generating revenues from the beginning of April. In the network services and other business, we continue to see a solid performance and have signed two new contracts in the context of smart cities and broadband connectivity in a mobility environment. Finally, we analyze any single opportunity we find to continue creating value for our shareholders, and such opportunities can be found by efficiently operating our business, improving our capital structure, or proactively managing our working capital and taxes, which contribute to our strong recurrent levered free cash flow generation in the period. Turning to slide number six. You can see here the evolution of PoPs and our resulting consolidated tenancy ratio, with increases being explained by consistent organic growth rates and recent change of perimeter. We have managed to organically at almost 700 POPs in the period, reaching a tenancy ratio of 1.58 times. On the next chart, you can find a comprehensive explanation of the revenues evolution in the telecom site rental business. You can see here how the existing asset base contributes with 6 million euros of revenues to our consolidated figure, while the change of perimeter, mainly Galatam Protelindo, adds 58 million euros in the period. Moving now to consolidated adjusted EBITDA, you can see how the negative impact of the DTT simulcast that took place in 2015, which was a one-off positive effect not seen this year, is more than offset by the switch-on of the new TV channels, the contribution of organic growth, and the change of perimeter. Let me now explain in detail, on slide 7, our recurrent levered free cash flow generation for the period. I would like to start by highlighting that the cash conversion ratio of EBITDA into recurrent levered free cash flow in the period has been a strong 88%, with the total figure increasing by 26% when compared to 2015. Looking now to revenues, the contribution from all the different business lines increased with a very well-contained cost base, leading to adjusted EBITDA growth of 18% when compared to last year. Maintenance CapEx is below our guidance, but it is expected to increase during the last quarter to reach more normalized levels. Our working capital change is positive for the period, but expected to be neutral at year-end, in line with our guidance. Interest paid reflect our capital structure as of September, with the coupon associated with our first bond being paid in Q3. Taxes paid reflect the implementation of tax management measures, as well as the schedule of tax payment due in the year. So, as you can see in page 7, our revenues grow by 15%, our adjusted EBITDA grows 18%, and recurrent leverage free cash flow grows even further, at 26%. This is one of the key characteristics of Cellnex. We can grow beyond our revenues growth. Moving now to our balance sheet on slide 8, Cellnex leverage for the period has reached 3.7 times net debt annualized EBITDA, and is expected to reach 4.5 times at year-end, including the closing of our recently announced acquisition, Shear. Our total borrowings reach around 1.3 billion euros, with our two bonds accounting for all of our debt. When assessing the change in net debt, it needs to be taken into account M&A, interest payments, and dividend distribution in the period. Please note that our next dividend payment will be submitted for approval at our Board of Directors meeting that will take place later in December. Moving to slide 9, we have so far explained our debt position as of end of September, but given our recent developments, it is worth providing a more updated picture on our capital structure as of today. You can see on the left hand side our current capital structure with new debt instruments having been signed at a very competitive cost of around 1%, allowing for additional debt associated with potential upcoming growth opportunities. Therefore, we have today a net debt position of 1.47 billion euros, with additional debt available of around 600 million euros. On the right-hand side, you can see our debt maturities profile and how it compares with our cash flow generation in cumulative terms, which shows how our cash flow generation covers future financing needs. In summary, we have a solid and long-term structure in place with no restrictions. We are today a current issuer with a strong market support, and we are committed with our solid credit rated in order to maintain the eligibility for the purchase program of the European Central Bank. Moving to slide 10, the assumptions we have shared in previous periods behind our financial outlook for the full year 2016 are still valid. We provide in 2015 a recurrent leveraged free cash flow per share increase of 28%, and we are expecting in 2016 an increase of well above 20%. We are proud to show a consistent and significant increase of our key value creation metric over the years. Given our recent M&A activity, we believe it is worth again offering a quick update on our last deals, and also to provide additional insight on how these transactions fit into our equity story. If we now move to slide 12, you can see a summary of recent activity. 261 towers from Protelindo, the acquisition of Conscon in Italy, an agreement with Bouygues to buy up to 500 towers in France, and our recent acquisition of Sir Group, which, added to our already significant portfolio, allow us to become one of the key players worldwide. These deals represent the initial steps into very attractive markets and allow us to achieve a more focused portfolio of services, ready to capture additional growth. Most importantly, this transaction allows us to diversify into countries with a strong credit rating and strengthen our relationship with a wider array of blue chip clients, therefore improving our business risk profile. Moving to slide 13, you can see here a table that shows how to think about cash flow generation from our recent acquisition. The cash conversion ratio from EBITDA into recurrent levered free cash flow is 70%, and the new deals are expected to generate 27 million euros on a full year basis, or in other words, around 15% of the recurrent levered free cash flow generated in 2015. And all this has been achieved with an extremely efficient capital structure and by applying our strict investment criteria. On slide 14, some more details on the Dutch operation of our last transaction. I would like to emphasize that we are consolidating our presence in the country while improving our industrial profile by strengthening our relationship with clients. Also, in slide 15, we offer a summary of our operations in the UK. It is important to highlight that by acquiring Sir Group, Cellnex takes its first step into a country with a very strong economy, with the objective to continue identifying and executing new growth opportunities and replicating, therefore, our successful international expansion strategy. And finally, slide 17, just some closing remarks before opening for questions. Again, a solid set of results, showing strong financials and executed value-accretive transactions. We have also issued our second bond in order to achieve even more efficient capital structure. First steps to becoming the European leader in the distributed antenna system. And finally, we still keep execution capacity to continue growing while improving our business risk profile. So, and with this, I would like to open the line to answer your questions.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you. The first question comes from John Vaughan from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thank you. It's Giles Thorne from Jefferies. I had three questions, please. Yesterday we had American Tower announce a joint venture with the Dutch pension fund PGGM, where it's going to transfer its German operations into a new vehicle and then sell a stake to PGGM. To my mind, this sends some mixed signals around AMT's ambitions in Europe. On the one hand, it's a pullback, but at the same time, it introduced what's probably an energized new partner for that business. So it'd be interesting to hear your perspective. Do you see M&A competition increasing from here? Secondly, I wanted to pick up on some of the financial problems RTVE is having in Spain. The local press has reported on the SCPI report that says RTVE needs dramatic action to avoid failing. Is there any risk to your pricing power for multiplex capacity when that comes up for renewal? And then lastly, turning to the share acquisition in the UK market, the UK market's quite unique in so much that it's perhaps the most progressive mobile network sharing market of anywhere in Europe. In the form of MBNL and CTIL, we have large and progressive quasi-independent tower companies. Given this unique market structure, how is the organic growth outlook in the UK any easier or any harder compared to your other markets? That was it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, regarding your first question, American Tower, yes, you are right. I mean, yesterday we acknowledged that American Tower did this joint venture with PGGM, and we it's not the first time that American Tower is in Europe, so it's not the first movement. You know that they have been in Europe since 2012. We have been competing with American Tower in the main deals in Europe. So again, I think that American Tower is really interested in Europe. So. And they are doing the strategy movements and taking their positions, but nothing new, to be honest, nothing new, apart from that they are monetizing part of their assets, but they remain interested. And this, at the end of the day, reflects the attractiveness of the European market. I think that we have to go beyond, no, the fact. If American Tower, if there are other bidders looking at Europe, if all this happens, is because there is value in this market, and Cellnex is the first mover here. So, of course, and there will be more movement. So we are ready to work. We are ready to go beyond what is set up. No, as you said in the last question, UK market is a challenging market. Of course, it is, but. Also, there are very important opportunities, that systems, no? And we have been very vocal here. We really believe we have something to say in this dynamic British market. And there are needs of opportunity that, of course, we're going to work out in detail. And it's now. And of course, there are sharing programs, there are network sharings, but there are a lot of opportunities, maybe through organic growth, pure organic growth, not only the possibility to acquire towers. You talk about Radio Televisión Española. Well, since year 2000, I think Radio Televisión Española has had problems, but I have not been able to see any different situation since then, to be honest. This is a public TV. You know, the Spanish state, how it is performing for the bad and for the good, and is one of our main clients. And I can tell you something, we will be there to help and to work with our client so that we reach always, with as any other client, win-win agreements. But we do not have this positioning of being white or black. is nothing new for us. It's our normal way of somehow reacting and working.
Understood, thank you.
The next question comes from Domenico Giral from T Equita. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. A few questions. The first, if you could clarify the guidance when you are referring to Q4 EBITDA being quite similar to Q3. So if you mean organically, or if you are also including the M&A contribution. And the second question is on the network service performance that was quite up quarter on quarter in Q3. I try to understand there is something. So what is behind this trend, if it is recurrent? And the third question is on your French operations. I was expecting a faster ramp up while I saw that was basically not contributing to the top line, and also the number of towers was below my expectation compared to the initial bunch that you were expected to buy. So if you can also clarify on this.
Sure, hi Domenico, this is Juan. First of all, on the guidance, all the assumptions we shared at the beginning of the year are still valid. Obviously, because of the execution of M&A, now we have additional building blocks, and we are not referring to any single figure for the end of the year. So basically, the way we are talking about guidance here is everything we said at the beginning of the year is still valid. And market consensus before M&A during the year is valid, and we believe we can reach that. And then on top of that, we should be expecting the proportional portion of the M&A contribution during the year, which is in line with the magnitudes we have already shared with the market. And then in terms of network services and others, this is an area where, for example, we have trading, which is the sale of equipment, and that provides with some volatility in the performance quarter on quarter. So this is the explanation of the performance for the period. And finally, on France, bear in mind that we closed the first batch of towers at the end of the period. So it's just a few days of contribution in the quarter. And also, the number of towers are today 113, and then we are also expecting the remaining part of the 230 batch will be contributing to our figures the moment we receive the waiver from our landlords. So that is expected to happen during the coming weeks, and that has nothing to do with the second batch of the agreement. So 230 that has already been closed, 113 towers are already contributing. And we are expecting to integrate the remaining part of that stage over the coming weeks.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Darren Cho from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, it's Paran Shah from Bank of America. Thank you for taking the questions. I have three for you. The first are related to American Tower. What I wanted to ask was, in terms of your criteria in relation to acquisition targets, do you think that your, shall we say, guidelines are more or less strict than for someone like American Tower, who, you know, I understand have a global mandate to pursue acquisitions. The second question is, do you believe that Cellnex might be a target for American Tower themselves, particularly in the context of the sizable stake that Albertis still retains in your company? And the third question is just on Italy. In terms of the net adds in the quarter, what proportion were actually from MNOs, and what proportion were attributable to fixed wireless players and things like that? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your questions. Well, the two first questions at the end of the day is about American Tower, and for me it's difficult to answer, but I will try to give you my point of view, which is just a point of view. I don't know if who is more strict, if American Tower or Cellnex, to be honest. For me, and as a CFO, would be very difficult to estimate the risk in Nigeria. It's, for me, it would be very difficult. So I don't know which is the error I could estimate there. I don't know. I don't know how can FX. So there are many things when comparing how strict from an M&A perspective we are. It's difficult to know exactly point by point, no? What I can tell you is that we are focused on long-term contracts. We are focused on reducing FX risk. We are focused on mature economies. And therefore, all this together defines a M&A and some requirements which has to be different. So it's difficult to compare. It's my question, no? My answer to that question. Your second question, which is about American Tower, well, again, we can be a target or not. It's something that should be answered by American Tower. What I can tell you is that the European market, even though it's mature, even though there is no FX risk, even though maybe inflation is not very high, even though everything seems to be interesting, and there are a lot of value to unlock. And again, Cellnex will be there to be the first to unlock this value for our shareholders. And then, regarding Italy, maybe Juanjo, you are better positioned than me to answer.
Let me provide you with a wider answer. In the case of so we have the full picture for Spain and Italy. In the case of Spain, on the new POPs generated during the quarter, I would say that 50% are coming from traditional MNOs and 50% are coming from alternative operators. And I'm talking here about fixed broadband. In the case of Italy, again, looking at the new POPs in the quarter, maybe the proportion is 40% for traditional MNOs, 60% for alternative operators.
Okay, great. Could I just clarify on the growth in Italy? Do you see in the coming quarters any pickup in MNO activity on your portfolio?
I would say we are maintaining our view. We have provided at the beginning of the year 3%, 4% range in order to in terms of new POPs generated in the year, and we have no indication by which we should be changing.
Yeah, and I don't know if maybe you were asking about M&A activity, so I don't know. No?
Do you mean about, are you referring to organic growth, Barry?
I was referring to organic growth, but I mean...
Organic growth.
Yeah.
No, exactly. We maintain our view, and we are seeing exactly the same trend as for the beginning of the year.
And maybe just to sneak in another question, what do you mean in terms of M&A in the Italian market? Are you looking for further acquisitions?
No. It's just to what kind of growth you are talking about. It was about to understand well your question. Nothing.
Okay, got it. Well, that was my question. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Barra.
The next question comes from Fernando Cordero from Banco Santander. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my three questions. The first one is, again, related with M&A. I would like to know what are your views regarding the potential firepower that the company is still having for additional deals at current stage. The second question is related with network and services, with network services business line. And I would like to know, in order also to understand at some extent the volatility, I would like to know what is the, excluding these equipment trading activities, what is the average duration of the current contracts in network and services, and for example considering that you have recently renewed one of the most important ones related with maritime services. And the third question is just trying to understand if there is a new trend behind some of the news that we have recently here in Spain, particularly in the sense of the recent agreement between MásMóvil and Orange, in which MásMóvil or Yoigo is reaching a tower sharing agreement with Orange. In that sense, are you seeing that the MNOs are looking for organically to extract value from their tower assets, or in other words, to become tower companies, or is it just like, for example, this agreement with between Yoigo and Orange is just a part of a larger strategic agreements and not as a pure activity related with the towers? Just to understand if MNOs could become even competitors for the independent tower companies. Thank you.
Okay, Fernando. Regarding M&A firepower, well, the firepower it's defined by several factors, no? First of all, our capacity to grow organically. Second, where we invest and what kind of contract we get from this investment, no? So it's not the same investing in one country which is, for instance, BBB than is AAA. because the business risk profile changes significantly. Also, it's not the, well, there are other characteristics that change the firepower. So I think that as of today, we have headroom to go on growing. How much? It depends on the characteristic. If for instance, we take a deal which is backlog, huge backlog with synergies, and we will have more headroom. So it's something we have to go case by case. What I can tell you is that from a money perspective, well, we try to execute our deals that from an industrial point of view make sense, generate value, and have long-term contracts with cash flow visibility, which can diversify our risk. So this depends on a case-by-case basis. We have been investing until today, let's say, 600 million euros, and as you can see, our ratings have not changed at all. So this can give you not even outlook. So you can see that this is somehow is because we improve also other parameters. Regarding the network services and other, maybe Juanjo, you can help me.
Yes, well, Fernando. Well, you know that within this business line, we have a bunch of sub-activities. We have emergency communications, connectivity, operations and maintenance. So it's the characteristics of the contracts are different across the services, but I would say on average you can assume 4 or 5 years of contract duration.
And then you were talking about MassMobile, Orange, and the, well, as far as we know, it's Yoigo had before a contract with Telefonica regarding a roaming agreement, not a national roaming agreement. Now it seems, and we say it seems because we do not have the info, it seems that this contract is going to change from one supplier to another supplier that you suggest is Orange. Fine. I don't know what has changed in this game yet. We are open to discuss all the configurations that this can have as a consequence, and we are open also to discuss the passive infrastructure. But please take into account that this roaming agreement is about active, no? Probably speaking, is active part of the equipment, and we are much more focused on the passive part of the infrastructure, no? So I don't see yet a big change here, and what I can tell you is that the company is working in different angles and with different clients.
No, my point was particularly on this agreement between Orange and Yoigo, is that Orange is going to provide passive infrastructure services to Yoigo for the Yoigo's network expansion. And in that sense, I would like to know if you are foreseeing or if you are seeing in the market more activity from the part of MNOs having already tower assets, offering actively these assets to third parties. That is, I would say, the angle that I was also trying to see your insights there.
Yeah, no, Fernando, it's something that that we have not seen in other. Well, in fact, in this situation, we are working. No, we are trying to understand the situation to see what angle we can contribute, and things change on a country-by-country basis. So, the key point here is to understand the business model that a company of as Telnes can supply in this environment, no? But it depends on our client needs and how the client wants to develop the rollout. So we are open to discuss, we are open to see, and in change by country change, but for us it's not an issue. It's just how we adapt to that situation.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Mark Murphy from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, Mark Murphy from Macquarie here. Thanks for the question. Number one, I just wondered if you had any idea of Iliad launch date. I know you've had discussions with Iliad on their Italian move. I was wondering if you have any knowledge you could share in terms of when they might launch and what sort of strategy they may deploy. Second question is just in terms of your presentation, you highlight new opportunities from the consolidation of the fourth mobile operator role across Europe. Are you talking specifically here where third and fourth come together, or are you saying more where fourth mobile operator maybe goes for a CapEx light approach, maybe a la Bouygues, where they're considering to sell towers and use a sort of tower sharing model? And then just a last quick question, if you don't mind, on rental costs. There's been a very small creep in Spain and Italy, but it makes me wonder how you're progressing in terms of your site renegotiation strategy. I remember you were targeting 5,000 sites for renegotiation predominantly in Italy. Thank you.
Hi, Mark. This is Juan. Well, on Liago, what we know is that the spectrum, in order to launch commercial operations in Italy, is going to be received by Iliata during the second half of 2017. So that's the earliest we should be expecting the Iliata to start their business in the country. So from there, depending on how they want to deploy their network, if there are opportunities to capture, obviously we will be talking to them. So, but in any case, it's not an opportunity to be materialized in the very short term, as the company has not even started commercial operations in the country. On the fourth operator wording we've used in the presentation, that is linked to Iliad itself, and also that is linked to MassMobile Iliad in Italy and MassMobile in Spain. Basically, what we're trying to say here is that at the moment we find an opportunity to do business with a fourth operator willing to deploy on network. We will be willing to offer our portfolio and try to capture organic growth from them. So we are specifically having in mind these two opportunities, both in Italy and Spain. Then on your third question, rental cost, bear in mind that on the rent line in our P&L is not only ground leases we have. We also have the expenses associated with our car fleet, satellite costs, connectivity cost, if we use third-party fiber. So we believe our ground lease costs are very well contained. The slight increase is due to some other lines contributing to this rent cost. And we are on track with our efficiency program. Hopefully we can provide more visibility on the specific savings we are achieving. You can see that on the non-money expansion CapEx, we are devoting important resources to our cash advances program. So everything is on track.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Henrik Herbst from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. I just wanted to follow up on Comscon and your plans there. Obviously, it's quite a rapid rollout of new DAS nodes, and I was just wondering if you could give a little bit of color in terms of at what rate. I mean, maybe that's just a one-off, and the rollout rate will slow down as we go along. And then, in terms of is that rollout essentially for one of the operators, or is that just you're billing out and then you go ahead and try to sell it? The other question is in terms of the economics of these DAS nodes, if you can give anything in terms of how many tenants you got at the moment and what rate you get from your tenants. And then I got another question as well. In terms of the energy pass-through revenues you've got in Spain on the telecom site rental, how much of the telecom site rental revenues is that? Thanks very much.
Hi, Henrik. On the Comscon rollout, basically the increase versus the initial figure we provided in H1 is because of organic growth that Comscon has been able to generate, and we are mainly talking about new projects. They are small projects. But it's not because of new nodes or additional nodes being associated with specific MNOs, simply Comscon being able to generate business in new locations in the north of Italy. Okay. Then on the economics of this business, we are still working on that, in the sense that we are working on a group-wide business plan. So at some point in the short term, we will provide more color on how we see the economics of DAS business, but for the whole of the Cellnex group. Bear in mind that the revenue per node might change depending on the involvement of the client on the development of the network. So if it's Comscon deploying the whole CapEx, we might be able to achieve a higher revenue per node. If the if a venue owner, for example, is willing to co-invest with Comscom, also the associated fee is also lower. So we have a wider range of possibilities within this business model. Then on the pass through, we are not providing the breakdown in terms of what is exactly the amount of pass throughs. I mean, on the annual accounts, we are giving that figure for the full year. Basically, bear in mind that in some cases we don't have dedicated counters within some shelters, so it's a matter of negotiating with the customer on a periodic basis on the adjustments to be made on the pass-through cost associated with electricity. So it is true that in this case, in this quarter for Spain, there have been some adjustments to this contributor to the revenue base, and this is why the performance for the quarter is flat, offsetting the pure organic growth generated in the period.
But you have to look at from an EBITDA perspective that the growth is coming, because it is, you can not only see the revenue, you can see, you have to see also the attached OPEX. No? So if you have this somehow a split of revenues and a cost associated, you can you would be able to see that the EBITDA is coming anyway.
That's great. Can I just follow up? So what tenancy ratio do you have on your current DAS nodes, please?
I would say to you that three. I mean, it's three in general. So you have in page 21 a slide that explains how this works, conceptually speaking. This is the business model that we will try to develop further in the presentation for the full year. And you can see that the system, how it works in the middle of the page. And here we implement three, MNO1, MNO2, MNO3. This is not by chance. This is because it's the typical system that we tend to implement, okay? And by the way, this is a very, interesting field in which we expect high growth in the next quarters. When we talk about defining the business model, be aware that this is something that we have the opportunity to shape in Europe, no? And this is a unique opportunity, and we are somehow elaborating this, although we have strong views that we have to be prudent to share at the right time.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Patrick Bacevich from Olive Tree. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is, thank you for taking my question. I have three. The first one is relating to the troubles of Telefonica and the failed Telxius IPO. There were press reports that you would be interested in Telxius. I presume the reports sort of meant to say that you'd be interested in some of the towers that Telefonica has. Can you maybe clarify exactly what was being applied there? And my second question relates to something quite abstract, which is broadband or Wi-Fi on airplanes. We know that Inmarsat has a network which is part terrestrial, part a satellite, and Verizon is thinking of providing Wi-Fi on the planes via their spectrum. Is this something that you're seeing as an opportunity in terms of additional tenancy on your towers throughout Europe? And my third and final question relates to the entrance of Iliad into the Italian market, and they are known for a relatively rapid rollout of POPs in the market that they entered into. That's, my question is there any limits to how fast they can deploy the network, or how fast do you think they could deploy the network if once they enter Italy proper? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your questions. I mean, regarding Telxius, I have no comment. I mean, it's something that goes beyond our scope. Regarding your second question, which is Wi-Fi and aeroplanes, this is, we are aware of this, and we also think that there are very little BTS, no, for this kind of services. It is true that internally this is one of the projects we have been assessing, and we keep two eyes on it, And again, this is like the business model of DAS. It has to be defined, and Cellnex is well positioned to capture value. And finally, you've been talking about Iliad. Again, this question could be asked to somehow better Iliad to Cellnex, but the thing is that we are ready to follow the indication of our client. If they really want to deploy before or later, I don't know, we will be there to make this feasible. We are not a bottleneck at the end of the day. This is important. We work with all our clients on a very confidential basis, and it's not us who has to somehow define this kind of strategies.
Thank you very much. That's perfect.
The next question comes from Nelson Bernardino from Highton. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking the questions. Most of them have been answered. I just have one left. I was expecting a little bit of increase in revenues from broadcasting since the new channels only started broadcasting in late April, but they were flat year on year. Was this because they were already contributing revenues throughout the quarter? And is this 61 million euros we should expect going forward, maybe updated for inflation? Thank you.
Hi, Nelson. This is Juan. Actually, the six new TV channels were switched on the beginning of April. So we saw a full contribution during Q2. That's exactly what we are seeing in Q3, and that should be taken as a reference for coming quarters. Okay. They were not switched on late April. That was in the beginning. So that's why Q3 on a standalone basis is almost spot on with Q2.
Okay, I misunderstood that. Thank you.
The next question comes from Germán García from JB Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, José Manuel and Juanjo. I have two questions. First one is on the efficiency plan. I would like to know if you can confirm to us the 2 to 3 million euro savings for 2016 on top of the 22 million of the total program, and which one could be your best guess for the year 17 in terms of savings. And the second one is if you are still interested in the further operations in the French market, which could be of a larger size than the ones already accomplished. Thank you.
Thank you, Carmen, for your questions. For a question regarding efficiencies, in the Excel sheet you will find better detail, not what I'm going to tell you, but broadly speaking, 15 million euros of investment as of today, or as of September the 30th, and with 2 million euros of savings. Again, if you talk about what's going to happen in 2017, let us review all the guideline for 2017 in the next quarter, once we have the visibility of the full year. However, I can tell you that this program is working very well, very, very well. And also, you were raising a point regarding French market. Yes, the French market is also a very interesting market in Europe. As you know, there are several, well, in fact, there is a public transaction going on right now. And we have the mandate to assess all the opportunities in let's say, Western Europe. And therefore, we are assessing this opportunity also. But nothing else. I mean, we are following the rules of the game or the seller, so just about that.
The next question comes from Ricard Boada from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, let me congratulate you for results. I have two questions, if I may. On one hand, could you provide us a bit of an update on the status of the rural sites rollout? And then, secondly, could you give us a bit more color on what opportunities do you see in the UK? Is it more on the build-to-suit opportunity coming from the network expansion that some of the MNOs are taking, for instance, like rolling out 4G, or is it more an inorganic opportunity from an MNO or another independent tower company. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Let's start by the second question. The UK market has some specificities, as we were saying before, and I think we have a good platform, enough platform to continue growing organically speaking, and especially regarding distributed antenna systems. So this is something we are really focused on. So as you can see, maybe it's more organic than inorganic, at least in the short term. Okay? This is the main characteristic of the UK market. And your first question, I have not been able to understand well, so can you repeat?
Yes, so the 2,000 rural sites that you mentioned earlier in Italy and Spain.
Yes, no, I'm sorry. Yes, as you know, and I think we have written down something in page 5, or we say that we have somehow started to execute a first part of this program. You can find in page 5 the third bullet point on your left, and we are quite happy, and you will have the results quarter by quarter. So this is important, again, working closely with our clients, adapting to the needs and to their timings, but again, delivering what we said some time ago.
Perfect, many thanks.
The next question comes from Luigi Minerva from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Three questions which are a bit on the big picture. Well, the first one is your view about new technologies, like, for example, the use of millimeter waves by some U.S. operators to complete the fiber deployment. So rather than doing it wireline over the very last part, they use effectively a wireless technology. And I was wondering if you see this as a possible opportunity, business opportunity for you, also in Europe, as they will do it also here in due course, the various MNOs. The second question is about buying lands, which is something that one of your peers or competitors, rather, is doing in Italy. Is it something that you are interested in? And more broadly, just going back to one of the points from your prospectus, whether medium term you have an ambitions to become a real estate investment trust. And thirdly, just an update on your views about backhaul as an opportunity and the capex it will involve, and whether you see still a good business case there. Thank you.
Hi, Luigi, this is Juan. On your first question, I would say that we are closely monitoring any technological challenge where we believe we can capture a new organic growth opportunity. In this case, we are doing something similar for a telecom operator here in Spain. What we are doing is connectivity services. So at a very small scale, we are providing the microwave connectivity. And this is included today in the network services and others business line. So, as I said, yes, we are pursuing these organic growth opportunities where we find them. But today we see them as a small opportunity for us so far.
Okay. Your second question was about land acquisition program in Italy. Of course, we have this cash advance program, and on top of that, the opportunity to acquire land, and we are already finishing the pilot, and I do think that will be a further interesting source of value for our shareholders. But yes, we do think we have headroom here. And your final question was about backhaul. I'm sorry for repeating this, as we cannot share all the details and all the stuff here. As clients require from time to time this kind of silence or working in in with prudence, you know. But yes, we are pursuing the opportunity. We are also developing the business model, and I'm pretty sure that that we will be able to explain at some point in detail. I think Cellnex, the good thing is that as we are not a real estate company, we are a infrastructure company, open to follow what our clients need, how our clients need evolve. And you have raised very interesting question, no? And because our clients evolve, and we have to evolve, and we have the capacities, and also we are already testing this to be again the first mover in the European arena.
Okay, just to clarify, I didn't understand properly when you talked about land acquisition. You think it can create value or cannot create value? Just
of course can create value. Of course, yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
It's not.
Thank
it's, you. Yes.
The next question comes from Ottavio Aderizio from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a few more questions left. The two very specific, the third, it's a bit big pictures, but relate to your business model. The specific one, it's on page 10, you show a breakdown in organic growth in levered free cash flow per tower that we could expect going forward for next year above 20%. Now, if I do the numbers in terms of what we expect from the generation from the new acquisition, it looks that through M&A, you should grow your levered free cash flow by around 14%. But of course, you do already consolidate some of this cash this year. So the question is, if you can give a breakdown for next year of this above 20% growth you expect on levered free cash flow, how much will be organic and how much would be through M&A for the acquisition you already seen it? The second one, it's I'm going into the specifics of your number. In organic growth per POPs, you actually recorded the highest growth both in Spain and in Italy. Now, I remember during the IPO and afterwards, you basically been passionate saying that the tower core business model in Europe is new, we need time, we have to convince MNOs. But over time, we believe that it could be a ramp-up. Is this a ramp-up you believe is happening now, or you reckon it's just a one-off and potentially go back to what we've seen in previous quarters? And the third one, it's a big picture, but because not in the sector, just on your business model. You're bidding for the towers that Antin is putting for sale. They actually mentioned during the call, but also your chairman has been pretty vocal. Now, early this year, you were being involved in the INWIT, and at that stage, you shared with us that you were prepared to go to a gearing of almost 6 times that to EBITDA. Now, things do change in the credit market, things do change in the market generally, so I was wondering if that 6 times is still valid, and that's now the sort of your business model. I'm still wondering, do you really need to have a broadcasting business in Spain? Which sort of synergies you basically extract? Of course, people can see that you got a higher tenancy ratio in Spain than in Italy, but that's because you bought a lot of the towers from the JV. So I was just wondering, there could be also going forward the possibility of reviewing the business model and focusing more on tower rental rather than just on the hybrid as you are at the moment, and potentially see the broadcasting as a way to cash it in. Thank you.
Ottavio, you have raised so many points that you will have to help me to remember all of them. So let's go step by step. I don't know. The first, you one of the
breakdown of the growth. Yeah,
break it down of the growth. In page 10, what we say to you is what we expect for full year in 2016. From accountant basis, no? So taking into account that one business will start generating EBITDA, for instance, Protelindo Towers are generating EBITDA for us since July the 1st, and maybe the French Towers are starting to work since late September, and Sea Group will start to work since late October, something like that. So the thing is that obviously it is, when we talk here about over 20% when compared to 2015, roughly speaking, is majority of it belongs to organic growth. It does not belong to M&A. Okay? So this is the first point. It's important to see this. And this is very linked to the follow one of the other questions you have raised, which was about financing strategy. No, financing strategy is not the same when you are maybe a company which is based in Spain and with Wynn in Italy with Galata, sorry, and then you become more diversified with new clients, and somehow we are trying to diversify and to increase our business risk profile. So this changes the metrics, and this changes the 6 times, the 6 times, the five times. It changes everything. So when you say we can reach to 6 times, my answer is yes, as long as our business risk profile increases, as long as from a credit perspective we can say, okay, even though the metric can be a little bit challenging, from a business risk profile the company can support further leverage. So the question is, if we reach 6 times, how we delevered later? We delevered in a more quicklier way than before? If the answer is yes, then the problem is not 6 times, it's how you get to the new target in 2017, 18 or 19. So it's a little bit sophisticated more than before. So we can get to 6 times? The answer is yes. Depends on the business risk profile and the delivering profile of the company after the acquisition. So it has to be done on a case-by-case basis. But the point here is we will do the most efficient structure to protect our shareholders and also to be eligible, because today being eligible has a value per se. What else? You raised the POP question. I don't know if it was the second or the third, but it was in the middle. POP question. Yes, you are right when you say that at the moment of the IPO, we were saying that the POP growth was not going to be steady in time and it was going to be linear. The POP growth can have some jumps and maybe, so maybe some, I don't know how you say it in English, so choppy, I think you say that, can be like a little bumpy, you know, up and down. That's true. However, also in different Q results we have very vocal about this. We do think that 3% is a good level of growth in terms of POPs. And the sources of this can be several, no? Can be, for instance, natural organic growth, so more multi-tenancy, or can be, for instance, more decommissioning. But if we think 3% is sustainable, and we have to fight for it as a company, at least. And then you were suggesting, to be honest, the last question for me was difficult to understand, to follow.
Can I repeat? Yes. Okay. So the last question is basically regarding your business model. You are more an exception than a rule in terms of your business model. You have broadcasting and TowerSat Rental in the same company. And this comes from history because, of course, the broadcasting was your the historical business, and then you diversified away. Now that you actually still keep growing, and of course there is a limit up to how much the balance sheet could be geared up, considering what you said earlier. So I was wondering, first of all, which sort of synergies we're talking about to keep that broadcasting business in-house? And I said, I can see the high tenancy ratios you have in Spain, but most of them come from because you bought towers with already 2 tenants. So what else we have to talk in terms of the synergies? And second, do you reckon that, and that is the big pictures, do you reckon that the business will look like this within 5-10 years, still an hybrid between broadcasting and tower site rental? Thanks. Hopefully that's now more clear.
No, thank you. Now I did understand, yes. First of all, many of our broadcasting towers has telecom site rental POPs. And you, I remember you were in the APO, and we explained at that moment, and this information is available in the website, or at least in the folleto, no? So there is a very clear, I mean, starting from the revenues and starting for the clients, a broadcasting tower can give service to the telecoms, to MNO. So this is the first scenario. Second, broadcasting for us is a must, sorry, is an end or it is a mean. For us, broadcasting is a mean. Broadcasting allows us to generate somehow visibility in our cash flows, to keep a relationship with very, very important clients with whom we can, as you were suggesting, develop further the broadcasting. You were talking about hybrid services that we are also targeting, and we would like to be there in as a first mover again to adapt the company to the new situation. But you know, the most important synergy is not this one. The most important synergy is that we have somehow we have the experience, all the experience learned from broadcasting, to have a different angle in telecoms and rental. We are managing in the broadcasting. We are managing in the value change. We are managing much more steps of this value change, no? And this allows us to adapt our client. When, for instance, when you raise the point of what about fiber to the tower? What about DAS? In the DAS, and you have this in page 25 or 21. You can see here. We are in the DAS system. We are already managing asset equipment. You are better positioned to do so if you have done it with broadcasting, just because the team is prepared. You have engineers. You have many things. So this gives us a real competitive advantage. Okay. So synergies is not only revenues, is not only what we say as a second point, but also it's about know-how.
And you reckon that this would be a differentiating factor vis-à-vis the other tower companies that don't have a broadcasting business?
It is. In fact, it is. And also, Ottavio, if we were able to do the IPO at the right moment, it's because we saw what's happening in our towers at that time. And we saw this because there were telecom site rental equipments in our towers, broadcasting towers at that time. That's the reason why we could acquire, back in 2012, the first telecom site rental towers in Spain and later in Italy, because we did have the know-how. And for sure, our MSC contracts are developed with all the know-how, all the level of services, all the details required by the clients, and we can even give more ideas. This is coming from something, because you have before managed all the value chain.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
The last question comes from Perrin Shaw from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just a quick follow-up. I'm slightly surprised by your defense of the broadcasting business in terms of the comments you've just made. What I wanted to do is maybe focus a bit more on where the risks lie within that portfolio, because I think that's what Ottavio is trying to maybe address. Could you maybe outline, in terms of your, just an update on the strategy, where does the broadcasting business go when the 700 megahertz goes to mobile? What is your time frame for that? Is there a T2 upgrade? Do you think there's revenue risk within this broadcast portfolio, or not really? Thanks.
This is Parren. This is one of the questions last Q results we were talking in detail, no, and we have to be back to the same answer that at that time gave Alex Mestre, our director of business, and he was very clear. I mean, we are, as you can imagine, fully aware of this process. And this 700 megahertz switch off has not a direct implication on the number of muxes. So our idea is, again, we can readapt the company and the same number of muxes to another band with another frequency, and that makes sense. So when we expect this, this is not driven by Spain, it's not driven by Cellnex, it's driven by the European Union, no? And there have been thoughts about this, and we do think, and it is stated by the European Commission clearly, since 2020 to 2022. So nothing new in this part of the business. We don't think that changing the frequency must have an implication on the number of muxes, not at all.
Okay, I guess that's clear. I mean, does this mean then, is this kind of a change in your the line that you're delivering to the market in terms of willingness to even acquire more broadcasting assets? Because you seem to be suggesting that these assets are, pretty desirable.
No. It is what we said before to Ottavio, no, when he raised the point. Broadcasting for us is a mean, not an end. Okay, for us is the what we were saying, no, the know-how. Is the initial part of the business, but it's not our end. Our end is to consolidate Cellnex as a telecom rental in Europe, and therefore we are the first mover. But broadcasting is not a mean, is not an end in itself.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are no further questions in the conference call. I now give back the floor to the company. Thank you.
Okay, so since we have no more questions, we can then conclude this session. I would like to thank you for your time, and if more questions arise, as always, I remain at your disposal. Thank you so much, and have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.